I tried to make it work for Windows, but.
It's like I'm not depending on how much more efficient that the two space thing is.
Well, the problem beats better, but well, something that seems sensible. Would your mom depend on whether it's much better or. I could give a straight out a different answer about this. If it's really, really stupid, like you do nothing, then it definitely depends on that. But it's something that seems reasonable, and then it doesn't come out. You probably get most of your mom. It has to be reasonable. But leaving like it, probably has to. Hey, that's kind of a.
Yeah,
I'm excited.
Wow.
Yeah, no, so give it a good try and write a justification for your position. What happened to you? Failed, you broke your arm? Ooh, and? Did you talk to your dogs?
Yeah.
Eh? Right, because that might have an effect on your how you're going to do this work. So you need to talk to your DOS and then you can then do it to the extra time so you can actually talk to the course organizer, opposite to me, then you can see what you're doing. Yeah, you should talk to, should definitely talk to your DOS immediately so that we can decide how best to do this.
Yeah.
How long do you need to have this?
6 weeks.
Well, fantastic. When, what, so some can't work at all? How is that going to work?
I'll try and have somebody ride it with me.
Not someone in that in the same class.
Exactly.
I mean, you can't do that. That's a bit of an issue. Right. I don't know. You need to talk to your director so that we will see what we can do. Yeah. Who's your dog? Okay. Right. So yeah, talk to your dog and then. It's going to affect the other standards as well then.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can't even take
this. Really? I can't have my lecture. At least the good thing is the lecture's online.
Yeah.
But still. Okay. Yeah, we definitely need to take you to the DOS because that's probably going to need some kind of special circumstances.
I recommend breaking
the
yeah.
All right. So.
Do you know how the networks are working? You can do wireless now?
That's the danger.
Yeah, I was thinking about this. Oh, well, I'll just show the file. It doesn't make anything else work.
That's a problem.
It doesn't work.
But this one works.
This one doesn't have.
Yeah, but you can. Oh, it doesn't have like. Oh, you want to do this in email, don't you?
Yeah.
So, what? Hold on, what network do you see? Yeah, oh, limited access.
Yeah, because they haven't. Waiting for it to come in.
So you connected to Central right now. There you go.
Yeah, because if I open the other one, it's going to take ages.
Yeah, well, maybe you'll be lucky. Well, at least it looks like it. That's because I'm standing here, isn't it?
No.
It's always like that, precious. Don't you know it when you're standing on your shoulder?
Like
you always get the password wrong.
Okay, that's good.
Well, that's, at least that's good news. Yeah, you need to put your private keys in it. Good. Are you going to do this just in a... Oh! Oh, that's okay, hopefully.
It should be really fast. I mean, it's fast from home.
Hold on, which Emacs are you using right now? Is that the Emacs on DICE?
That's the only one where the Haskell highlight, syntax
fast,
highlighting.
Actually. I'm surprised it looks that quickly.
Yeah.
Oh, you haven't connected it yet. Oh, it's over this time. I'm leaving dangerously.
What?
Leaving dangerously. Can't you just use the key?
Yeah, I can, but I don't know which key it is.
Yeah, reminds me, you can give me, we'll talk about this, so slides for next, but you probably change it, don't you? Maybe I'll learn from this.
Okay.
Good luck.
Thank you.
I didn't forget to tell them about the extra dropping now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are asking how long the PPL is supposed to take.
Yeah. How long is it supposed to
take?
Depends on the sentence.
Should they tell them or something like a broad
joke? Yeah, you can give them a broad kind of thing. I think I might sit in actually.
I was thinking about telling them, I've told some people that 5 minutes is...
For the big ones?
For all of them, yeah. 5 minutes.
Yeah, big sentences. Yeah, I think you want to give them some kind of indication. If it's like going on for like 10 minutes,
yeah.
Something's not quite efficient in what they're doing.
Yeah, I won't have time. Can you hear me through the mic? Is it good? Okay. So hi. This is the bonus lecture that we set up for you guys to help you out with the assignment. And it's basically a refresher lecture for Haskell, because most of you are pretty rusty with your Haskell since the first year that you last saw it. And first of all, you need to excuse me. I've had a cold, and you might need to excuse all the sound effects and everything. Apart from that, if this is going to be a small demo with some very simple functions and simple things about Haskell. So if any of you expected any complicated, advanced Haskell tactics or a theoretical analysis of monads or anything like that, this is not what the lecture is about. Yes, let me fix that. So basically, that would be the first point that I wanted to make before we get started. So this course is not a Haskell course, and your assignment is not an assignment on Haskell. This is an agents and reasoning course, and your assignment is on propositional inference. So the main point I want to make is that you don't have to use any complicated techniques from Haskell or anything weird. You can just use the simple things that we're going to talk about here, and you will be able to answer all of the questions for the assignment. And just a simple example off the top of my head, if you don't know what list comprehensions are, you don't, for example, need to use them necessarily. You can replace all the functionality with recursion and whatnot. So if you don't understand something complicated, then just use the simple things that we're going to talk about today. So Haskell. Haskell is a functional programming language. And that means that everything in Haskell is a function. The same way that everything in Java is an object, in Haskell, everything is a function. And whenever we want to build a program, we build a function to do what we want it to do. So in a simple example, we've got add xy equals x plus y. And this is a simple function that will just add two numbers. Oops. I can't see my mouse, sorry. Simple addition. And typically in Java, so I'm assuming that everybody has some or quite a lot of experience in Java, right? Can I see a raise of hands? Anybody who is really good with Java? Okay. Anybody who is really good with Python? Okay. Anybody who is really good with PHP? Oh, not as many hands as I expected. Okay. Anybody who is really good with Haskell? Okay. I'm not sure you're going to be really interested in this stuff, but it might be useful. Generally, when we're writing a function in Java, in C, for example, we need to have the header for the function. And that header just defines what each argument, what the type for each argument is going to be, and what kind of type the function is going to return. Now, this is not necessary in Haskell, so we don't have to do it. For example, in the add function, we haven't defined what x and y are. We just give it to it. And Haskell has the power to infer on its own what the types are going to be. But it's general good practice if we do define the arguments and the type of our function, and it also helps with debugging. Okay, so in the second example of add2, we have defined the type of add2 as being this huge type. And this type says that this function takes one integer and another integer and returns the result as an integer as well. Okay, so it, arrow integer means that we have two arguments that are integers and a result which is also an integer. Okay, I've got a third example there just to show you that the type can be a variable, but we don't have to worry about this at this point. Further down. Okay, so we talked about a little bit about types, a little bit about functions. How do we control the flow in a function? And we have this very original if-then-else statement. For example, if we want to find the absolute value of a number, that's going to be a function that takes one integer and returns one integer. And a simple if-then-else statement, like in all languages, if x is greater than 0, then x, else minus x. Simple, straightforward if-then-else. Another way to do this, to change the behavior of a function in Haskell, is using guards. What are guards? Guards are these sort of like, you can imagine these guards as a series of if-then-else statements. So when you're calling ABS3, then Haskell is checking each one of these guards. And if one of them is true, then it does whatever is on the right-hand side of that equal sign. So we're changing the definition of ABS3 depending on what the guard is. So in this particular case, if x is greater than 0, then we return x. Otherwise, we return minus x. And I've got this more complicated example. You can see that we can have as many guards as we want. This is just a grade function that you give it a number and it returns the sort of the grade. Something like that. So it just checks, when we give it an argument, it just checks each one of these guards, which it can be any expression. And the first one that becomes true, it returns the result on the right-hand side, or it executes the right-hand side of the equal. Yeah?
Question about minus x. Why doesn't, does it do what it's supposed to do? Doesn't it, I don't know how it's called, like sequencing, I think? Doesn't it return minus x, doesn't return a function that if you pass it another argument, returns that minus x?
Not exactly. You're talking about carrying. We're going to cover this further on. But no, that's not what it's doing. So you have to. It's actually taking.
If I write plus x,
you're referring to this. So if you write minus 5, it's going to be minus 5. But if you write minus 5, it's going to be a function. We're going to talk about this. So just you're going to see
if
how this.
If I write plus 5, the same way I wrote minus 5, isn't going to be a function?
I don't think so. Oh, yeah, in this case, yes. But minus can also, it works also as a.
So minus is a special case.
Yes. Back to guards. So you can think about that. So we're checking each one of these guards in the order that they're given. And the first one that matches, we return the result. So in my case, I gave it 50, I think. Yeah. So the first one guard that matches is this one. This one. And it returns E. So you can think about this as a series of if then else checks. I've got another example, an is non-zero function. It's taking an integer and it's returning true if that integer is non-zero. So simple if-then-else statement, if x equals 0, then false, else true. Simple guards, if x equals 0, then we do false, otherwise we return true. Now we have a third way, which is pattern matching. And we use pattern matching when we want to change the behavior of the function depending on what sort of argument we are giving to it. So in this case, this says we have two definitions. The first one says that if the argument we give it to it matches 0, then we return false. Or if it matches anything else, we return true. So the underscore in Haskell is basically a wildcard that matches anything. We could be using the star, but star is we use star for multiplication, so we don't want to get confused. So underscore just means it matches anything. Yes?
You gave it something that wasn't an integer, but it's still giving truth.
Oh, let's try this. Oh, yeah. No, it wouldn't. First of all, it wouldn't. Because put the type up here. So the type is expecting us to give it an integer. But even if we hadn't, as soon as you use this first one, it infers that the first argument is going to be some sort of number. Maybe not an integer. It could be a float or some other number. But it starts some sort of number. So actually, if I give it p, it's going to fail. And if I try to take out the
sorry. Oh, come on. Yeah. Yeah,
still fails. Okay? So it's inferring from the first. Yeah, I could have done it for the, yeah, I didn't do it for the pattern matching, but that's the same. It's the same. It's inferring the type on its own. And it understands that the first argument is going to be some sort of number. Okay? Another control flow, another way to control the flow is case splitting. And we also have this in the other languages like Java and whatnot. And it's simply saying case x of 0, then true. And we use this arrow for the case split. And the underscore, again, anything else, the result is false, which is actually not what we want. Yes, it should be false. And this should be true. OK? OK. So now on to the where clause. Now, the where clause is something we use very often in Haskell. And we use this when we want to have, when we want to have local variables. And what are local variables? OK, so this is an example from C or Java. I think it works with Java as well. So let's say we want to have, build a function that returns the sum of the absolute of the absolute values of two numbers, of two integers. So we can do it simply like this, like return absolute x plus absolute y. Or it might be the case that absolute is the function is, maybe it's a more complicated transformation. Or maybe we use this in many places in the same function. So we want to factor this out and use this local variable. We do this in Java and all the languages. So we just say that x prime is absolute value of x, and y prime is the absolute value of y. And we return x prime plus y prime. Okay, or we can use x prime and y prime wherever we want in the function. And that's exactly the same thing that we can do in Haskell, but we're using the where clause. So in the first case, we just say that add abs of x, y equals absolute x plus absolute y. Whereas in the second case, we want to factor the absolute values out. So we're saying that the add abs 2 of x, y is x prime plus y prime, where x prime is the absolute value of x and y prime is the absolute value of y. OK? Yeah?
Will the first add abs actually work? Don't we need parentheses around abs y?
I don't think so. Yeah, my laptop screen doesn't show me the pointers, and it's confusing. So yeah. Or you can do it like this if you want to be sure.
But I'm confused. Doesn't the function application have the highest precedence?
Well, not if no, because the thing with plus is that it knows that it's it has less priority than the other functions. Plus is because it's
okay. So right, I get it.
It's an infix operator, so it knows that its priority compared to the others. So that's fine. Okay, so that's all about the where clause for local variables if we want to use anything like that. And now we're going to go into carrying, which is usually the first thing that confuses people with Haskell. What is carrying? So like I said at the beginning, everything in Haskell is a function. So we can actually define things like this. So we had this initial definition of add, which was add xy equals x plus y. And now we have a different definition, which does exactly the same thing, and says that add 4 is plus. And plus is a function. So we say that our function add 4 is exactly the same function as plus. And this actually works. Right? Yeah. And similarly to this, we can just have an add 5 function. And we say that add 5 is exactly the same function as add 4. Now, add is a function, or plus is a function that takes, as we said, takes two arguments, two integers, and returns an integer. Okay? Now I want you to see what happens if instead of two arguments, we only give it one. Can you imagine this? Just having plus and giving it one argument. What will happen then? What will happen then is this integer will go away, and we're going to end up with this part just here.
Actually, let me highlight with the mouse. So we end up with this part. And what does this part mean? Well, let's think of another function, add1. So that's a function that adds 1 or increments an integer once. And this has the type of, it has one argument, which is an integer, and returns an integer. So if we take this function and we only give it one argument, then we have the same type as this function. So this is exactly what happens. Okay. So one way of doing the add1 function is to say add1 x equals x plus 1. The other way is to say that the add1 function is add 1. So we only give it one argument, and it's creating a new function on the fly, just right there, which adds 1 to whatever is going to be the second argument. Was that clear enough? So add 1 is actually add the function add 1. And if we use this on 1, 2, on 5, it's going to return 6. If we use this on 0, it's going to return 1, and so on. Okay, so it's adding 1. So this is a way to build new functions based on the ones we already have on the fly. Okay, so we just have, I'm going to have a better example of carrying as we go along, something that's more interesting than just adding 1. But generally, that's what happens with carrying. It allows us to build functions on the fly just by giving it some of the arguments instead of all of them. Okay? Now, I've got a few things on composition, but I'm going to skip through that. It's not as important as the rest of the stuff. And I'm going to move to lists and recursion. Now, that's the interesting part that confuses people as well. So lists and recursion are the main things that we use in functional programming to program. And lists and recursion are the things that allow us to do loops. And that's the thing that drives everybody crazy. So lists, what are lists? So I don't know how many of you know about lists and how they're implemented in Java or in C, or if you know about connected lists or stuff like that. But generally, when we're talking about lists, we're talking about a series of nodes. Each node has a value. It has a pointer to the rest of the list. So basically, we can actually define a list like this, like a list that has three elements, 1, 2, 3. That's fine. But in reality, what this is, is a list that has a node that has the value of 1 and a pointer that shows to the rest of the list. And the rest of the list is another node, 2, that has a pointer to the rest of the list. And the rest of the list is an element of 3 has a pointer to the rest of the list. And we're done now. So the last part is just the empty list, which is the two brackets. Okay, I'm going to close the brackets. You're going to see that's exactly the same thing. So we've got a head. That's called the head, the first element of a list. And the rest of the tail, which is also a list. So it's a list is defined based on another list, which is the weird part. Okay. So we have a head, and the rest, the tail is another list, which is also a head with a tail of another list, which has also a head and a tail of another list, which is the empty list. OK, hopefully that wasn't too confusing. And generally, this is the way we're treating lists in Haskell. There can only be two types of lists. It's either going to be the empty list, or a list that has a head and a tail. And the head is going to be one value. The tail is going to be another list. And this is what allows us to do, since list is defined based on itself, this is what allows us to do recursion. And let's see what sort of useful things we can do with lists. Let's say we want to build a function, addL, that adds all the elements of a list. How are we going to do this? So this is not the only way of doing this. Okay, I want to make this clear. I'm just giving you a way to clear your mind of having to think about these things. So consider this as a trick to build recursive functions. Okay. So, like I said, we only have two types of lists: empty lists and lists with a head and a tail. So this is what we're going to use. We're going to define our function for these two cases. So we're going to define our function for the empty list, and we're going to define our function for the list with a head and a tail. 99% of the chances that you want, of the times that you want to build a recursive function on lists, this is what you do. You have a definition for the empty list and a definition for a list with a head and a tail. Now, let's take one step at a time. The empty list. So what happens if you add all the elements of an empty list? What's the result going to be?
Zero.
Zero. Exciting stuff. OK, so that's the easy part. It's easy, but it's also essential. Because in some cases, it's not so clear what it's going to be. So you need to take care of this first. Now, the second part is the part that we have a head and a tail. Now, the power of recursion is, in this particular case, now, again, I don't want to go into the theoretical details of recursion and all that, just simple tips and tricks. So the trick about recursion is that we magically know what the result is going to be for the tail. OK? So we have the head lying around, and we magically have the result of add L on the tail. By magic. Just pretend it's magic. OK? So we have a list that has a head and a tail. And we know what the sum of the tail is. How do we figure out the sum of the entire list? We just add the head to the result of the tail. Right? So we magically know the result of the tail, and we add the head to it because that's what we want the function to do. OK? So I'm going to reload the code. I'm going to run at L on 1, 2, 3, and it's going to work. OK? So again, I don't want to analyze this theoretically, why this is happening and how this, I mean, I could spend a whole lecture just discussing recursion. But this is just a tip of how and trick, a trick of how to build recursive functions, how to think about these. Because I know that a lot of you guys get confused with recursion and how do I do for loops? How did I do stuff like that? Well, this is how to do loops. One case, the empty list. Decide what the empty list, the result for the empty list is going to be. Second case, a list with a head and a tail. Think that, imagine that we magically know the result for the tail. Then do whatever you have to do with the head. I've got a second example. Actually, I've got the same function defined in different ways, just to show you that there are ways of doing this differently, like with an if and else statement, with guards, blah, blah, blah. But I want to skip through this and want to go to the next example, which is another function, which is called count zeros. So we have a list. This is just an example. This doesn't have to be the list. We have a random list, and OK, a list of integers. Here you go. And we need to return how many zeros are in that list. So I want you, using the trick that I just described, I want you to try and build that function on the paper or the laptop or whatever you're using right now. Just a couple of minutes. Try and do it with the trick that I just described. And then we're going to do it together, and you can see if you went the right way or not. OK, that was actually 1 minute, but hopefully you made good progress. OK, let's do this together now. So like I said, we need to build a function for both types of lists. First list is going to be the empty list. Oh, count zeros. It's going to be a list with a head and a tail. That's just a typical way of picking variables for the list. OK, so what's the result? Well, how many zeros does the empty list? Oh, sorry. Yes, yes. I've got the example further on, so I'm going to show it. Let's just keep it simple now. So how many zeros does an empty list have? Zero. And now, oops, let's pretend that we know what the result of count zeros XS is. Let's pretend we know this. How do we figure out what the result is for the entire list? Well, let's see.
if x, come on, if x is 0, then we're going to have to add 1 to whatever result we got for the tail. Else, we just return whatever result we got for the tail. Okay, pretty simple.
Sir,
yeah.
You can use pattern matching for checking the 0.
Yeah, I know. That's what he said as well. But we'll just mention it further on. Just want to give it a simple example, just to how we do recursion. Okay, so this is how it's going to be done. So we magically know what the result of the tail is, and we consider the head as well and return the result. Now you can also do this, you can factor it out and say that this is, I don't know, XS or what, R, and this is also R. You can use the where clause. Oh. Okay. Okay, so this is an example. It's got 3 zeros in it, and that's what the function returns. Okay, hopefully that will be clear about, so that it will allow you to build any recursive function you would need. And this is another kind of factoring out that I did here. So I just put a bracket around this part and said that if x equals 0, then 1, else 0, plus the result of the tail. Another way to do it is using guards. So guard, if x equals 0, then 1 plus tail zeros, otherwise tail zeros, where tail zeros is the number of zeros of the tail. And the other thing is the solution that these two guys suggested. We can use pattern matching to match our argument. So in the first case, it's going to be the empty list. The second list is going to be a list with head 0 and a tail. And the third argument is going to be anything with a tail. That's just another way of doing it. Well, I want to get to feel it's more complicated than it really is. Double recursion. Now we have time for double recursion. That's good. Now it's very often the case that you need to do double recursion. And that's a small example. I don't think that this is a valid code in any language, but anyway. It's close to Java. It's an example of the intersection of two lists, or in the case of Java, that would be two arrays, or C. And we need to take the intersection of two arrays. What does that mean? Just take an array with all the elements that are common in both arrays. Simple enough. And what we do in this example in Java, we just keep the length of the first list and of the first list, and the length of the second list, and we build a result. And then we go through, we use this I to go through all the places, all the positions in the first array. And then for each of these positions, we go through all the positions in the second list. And we compare these. And if they're the same, we add this to the result. So we have this nested loop. Like, this is pretty common. I also have the same code or a similar code in PHP. It's slightly different. So what this is doing is, instead of having this iterator, or actually, yeah, instead of having the length of the lists, instead of counting the length, we just say we use this isSet, and we check if we have the position set. So we just avoid using the length. That's all that the difference with this one. Now, this is another thing that confuses people a lot. How do you do double loops in Haskell, or double recursion? And I think the easiest trick to go through this is to build a second function. Now, again, there are ways to do double recursion in very nicely with, you know, inside one function, or using list comprehensions, or blah, blah, blah. There are a million ways of doing this. But the most straightforward way for people that, you know, like you, that get confused with recursion, and for me, I do it the same way as well. That's exactly the way I do it, is to build a second function. So the second function is going to be the inner loop, and your original function is going to be the outer loop. Okay? So you want to build a function that does the inner loop. And what does the inner loop actually do in this case? What this does is it's taking
one of the elements of the first list, and it's comparing it to all of the elements of the second list. Okay? So this is exactly what we're going to do. We've got an isIn function. It's taking an integer as a first, a list of integers as the first argument, and a single integer as the second argument, and is returning true if that integer is within the list, or false otherwise. That is the inner loop of what we want to build. And it's again, the same trick that we'll be following. First definition is, I see some people writing notes. I'll actually post this online, so you don't have to copy the code right now. Okay. Again, first case is the empty list. The empty list, and compared, if we try to find anything in the empty list, we're not going to find it. It's false. And if we have a list with head y and tail ys, and we're trying to find x, then if x equals y, then we found it. Otherwise, we're just looking at the tail. Or, using the trick that we said, we already know if it's in the tail, and we're checking the head as well. If we find it in the head, that's cool. If we don't, we check the tail. So that's the first loop. That's the inner loop. Now, having this as a function, it's making it really easy to do the second loop, the outside loop. So what does the outside loop do? Sorry. What does the outside loop do? It's looping through all the elements of list one and using the inner loop on them. And that's exactly what our function does. Again, same trick. This is the final function, so we have these two lists of integers, and we return a list of integers. The empty case, the case of the empty list. If the list is empty, then the intersection between an empty list and whatever else is the empty list. And then if we have a list with head x and tail xs, and we want the intersection with list l, then we check, is x the head? Oh, okay. Again, the trick. We already know the intersection of L with XS. We already know that magically. And we have it. It's tail intersection, if you like. Okay? So now we need to know if X is going to be part of that intersection. Okay? So if X is within L, then our result is a list with head X, because we want to add X to the result, and tail the result for the list, the tail intersection. Otherwise, we omit x, and we just return whatever the result for the tail is. OK? Clear enough? So this is the way that we accomplish this double loop. We create a second function, a help function, for the inner loop. And then the original function is going to be the outer loop. And this is the way to do triple loops, and as many loops as you want. Just build a third function. OK. List functions. Now that we have figured how recursion works, and I mean, with lists and recursion, you can do anything you want. So the things that we're going to do now, there are some functions for lists that help us out, so we don't have to do simple recursions all the time. If it's really simple, we might want to avoid it using one of these functions. Again, these are helpful examples. You don't have to use the list functions if you don't understand how they work. You can build your own recursive functions if you want. But these can just help you around. So we've got this double function. I didn't mention this because it was in the part I skipped. Just take the double of a number. And what we want to do is take a list of numbers and create a second list that has all the doubles of the original list. Okay? And for that reason, we use the map function. Now, the map function is a function that you use when you want to do something on all the elements of the list and get the result for all the elements of the list in a new list. Okay, that's when you use the map function. And if you want to do this using carrying that we discussed before, you don't need to put x here. You just say that the double of a list is the map of the double to whatever argument you give it to. Okay? So map is for mapping things. Okay, let me do this. Double lists of 1, 2, 3. It should be 2, 4, 6. Now, another two functions that we use that are helpful, and again, really confusing for students, is the fold right and fold left.
Now, imagine that you have a list, and you want to fold the entire list together into one thing. That's when you use fold. And a good example is the thing that we tried to do before, to add the elements of the list. So we want to fold all the elements together and add them together to find their sum. This can be done very easily using the fold function. Fold right or fold left. And we give it, it has three arguments. OK, let's actually have a look at this if we can. OK, so that's the fold function. It's got these kind of arguments. So we need a function of what we're going to do, in this case, add. Okay, we're going to add all the elements. We need a first element, just something to start with, to get us started, because if what happens with the empty list, for example. So we have to have an initial result, an initial step to start with, and the list. And if you use add L4, it's going to give us the sum of the list. Now, fold left is the same as fold right, but it changes the direction of the folding. So as I said, we have a list and we are folding it. Are we folding it from left to right or from right to left? And in the particular case of the adding the numbers, it doesn't make any difference. But if you're subtracting numbers, that makes a difference. If you're folding it from left to right or from right to left. So if we're doing diff left, we're getting this result. And if we're doing diff right, we get that result. Why? I've actually put on comment what each of the functions does. So left or right corresponds to where we put the brackets. If we start from left and we start adding brackets from the left, then we got fold left. If we start adding brackets on the right, we got fold right. Okay, so we start with 0, which is the initial element that we give. We start adding elements, we start the brackets from the left. Or fold right is when we start from the right. And if you do the calculation, that's the result, basically. Again, if this is too confusing, just don't use it. Just go ahead, build your own recursive function, and get done with it. But you can have this example if you want to make things easier. Now, the filter, yeah. Comparing the difference?
I'm just thinking, what does it do conceptually? The folds, right, the difference.
This is what it looks like for the first one and for the left one, and this is what it looks for the right one.
Yeah, but what does it do conceptually? Is there anything?
I don't know. I have no idea, actually. No. The first one is actually the one that you would want, that would make sense. Just subtracting all the elements of the list from zero, that would be the first one. But the second one, I don't really know if it's anything. Yes, in a different case. In this particular case, I don't think it means anything. But generally, it's useful in some cases, if it's right associative, like you said. Yeah, in this case, it doesn't mean anything. I don't know. OK, filter. Filter is another useful function we use in Haskell. And it's allowing us to filter out some elements of the list based on some criteria. And how do we in this case, we want to build the getKnownZeros function. So remember, we had the isKnownZero function before that checked if a number is 0, then it would return false. Otherwise, it would return true. And we're using that in a filter to filter out all the elements of x that are non-zero. GetKnownZero of z, non-zeros. And this is z. OK? So it's filtering out all the elements of x, in this case z, this list, for which is non-zero returns true. That's basically it. If this function returns true for any of the elements, then we put it in the result. Otherwise, we don't. And this is a good example of using filter and carrying in one step to do something useful. So this is the intersection function that we built before. And this is a way to do a double loop without doing a double loop. So we're using filter, and we use carrying. So let's go back to the isIn function just to see. Here's the isIn function. So the first argument is the list, and the second argument is the member that we're going to check that list
if the element is in it. And what we're doing is we're giving it just the first argument, which is the second list in our case. And we're trying, and the first one is going to go, the filter is going to take care of the loop. So if we just give it a list, we're going to create a new function, a new isIn function, like on the fly, that checks that list for any element that we give it. This is exactly what carrying does for us. Okay? We're creating this function on the fly. This is what carrying does. This function on the fly that is going to check, it's going to have only one argument, and it's going to check that argument against that list. And we're filtering using that function against on L2, and we get exactly the same result. If you don't believe me, I didn't even try the first one, but okay. So the common elements between the two lists is 2 and 4. And that's how useful carrying can be in some situations. OK, last couple of things. Pairs. Now, pairs is something you also use in your assignment. It's something really straightforward. Pairs are just considered as a single object in Haskell. And all you have to, like, 1.2, or it can be pairs of lists. Right, and you can use the first and the second functions to take the first or the second element of the pair. That's all you need to know about pairs, basically. Using these two functions, you can access each of the elements and do whatever you want. Okay. You can also do pattern matching with pairs. You can write things like that to do pattern matching. Oops. Okay, you can write things like that to do pattern matching where the first element matches anything, stuff like that. The last thing I want to talk about is the maybe monad. And yeah, the maybe monad. It's like the only monad that you need to know about. And we use the maybe monad when we're not sure if we're going to come up with a result or not. And I thought the best example to show why we need this and how it works is the check formula function from your assignment. It's already given in the assignment. So the check formula function, if you remember what it's supposed to be doing, it's supposed to check a formula whether or not it has been satisfied yet, or whether or not it can't be satisfied, or there's a third result as well that we can't decide. Okay. So we need basically to return a Boolean value. We take a formula, and we return a Boolean value, which says if it's true, then it means our formula was satisfied, and we're done. If it's false, then it means that it can't be satisfied, and we failed. And if we can't decide, then we return this nothing. Okay. So the maybe monad allows us to return either just a result, like just true, like in this case, or just false, or nothing. And then that nothing has a special meaning depending on what we're doing. In this particular case, nothing means that we can't decide whether the result is true or false. So we have this intermediate result. It's nothing as a result. OK, so that's what we use the maybe monad for. And another simple example, actually, we're not going to implement it now. But another good example is the search function. So imagine that we want to search a list for one particular element. And if that element is in the list, then return, is it the position that we return? Yes, it's the position. Return the position of the element in the list. OK? And well, if the element is not in the list, then there is no position for us to return. So we have to return something that means that we actually didn't find a result. And that result is going to be nothing. So we're either going to return nothing. For example, if we're trying to find an element within the empty list, it's not in there, we return nothing. Otherwise, again, the same trick, like I told you. If we have a list with head y and tail ys, if x is the head, then we return 0 because it's the first element of the list. It's the head. Otherwise, we assume that we know the result of tail search. So we know the result of searching x in the tail. And we're checking what the result is. So if we,
as again, we magically know what the tail gave us as a result. If that result is nothing, then we didn't find it. And x is not the head, and y is not the head, x is not the head either. So we actually didn't find it. We need to return nothing. If we did find it, then tail search returned just a, just the result. And all we have to do is return a plus 1. Because we are actually adding one head to the list, so it's pushing everything one step further. OK? And that's how we use the maybe monad, basically. There are actually other functions, like from just, that allow us to take a value from just 5 to get rid of the just. But generally speaking, you shouldn't need to worry about this. You could just use a case split like that with pattern matching and work your way through. So that was it for me. As I said, I'm going to upload this on the website. I don't know if you have any questions. Anything about Haskell? OK. The other thing is, you all know about the drop-in lab on Wednesdays, 4 to 6. There's going to be a second drop-in lab starting from next week on Mondays.